Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show, guys. Thanks for coming in. We're going to have a good one starting out this fall season. McGill, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to do this. We've been covering your videos for the last few days and your information about Planet 7X, and it's captivated the attention of so many people, including myself. So thank you and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Jesse. And I want to apologize for some of your guests. They're having trouble to download the book that I offer free because there's too many people trying to download it at the same time. So they have to wait 24 hours for Dropbox to reset the server, I guess, or whatever it is.
Yeah. I got you. And that's on your planet7x.com website, Gil. Is that the correct address?
Most of my information is really underneath the videos. If they go under the videos, there's a link that goes to Dropbox for information. And it opens up. The first one is for the book, and then the other ones are for reference files, whether it's the Hebrew or like the Aramaic or whatever references that I'm able to furnish for people.
I got you.
So they can retrieve it for free.
Well, again, on the last three or four videos, guys, I think I have all of Gil's links there, and we'll put them up again here before the show's over if you need to do that. But again, YouTube is Planet 7X, and I believe I'm right on planet7x.com. Gil, we were talking the other day, and you brought up so many interesting things that with someone like me, it would take a month to sort through it. And each time I find a different aspect of what you're talking about, it leads down an entire new trail of research. And to me, that's a good thing because I enjoy it so much. I enjoy finding out these things and sharing them with the audience. Of course, everyone's big question is, an arrival time. We're talking about Planet 7X coming in to our inner solar system or the effects of it. I've heard you say before that there's no way to put a definite time until there's a sighting. Could you talk about that a moment with us?
Right. We have a planet-sized object that has not a set time for its orbit. And the reason for that is because it's on the planetary plane, and that's where most of the objects are in the universe. And I can clearly point out a time frame where it really changed things. This was during before the time of the Exodus, where it appears that it collided with the planet Ceres, and that's what made it's a debris field that we call the asteroid belt today. Well, that slowed down the forward speed to about 1/20th of its normal, and that caused the 3 days of darkness instead of a 3 hours of darkness like during Yeshua's sacrifice. So it didn't have the momentum when it went around the sun to bring it into a deep, deep orbit. It only had a shallow orbit about 52 years where it came back to Joshua's long day. Then after that, it went around the sun, picked up a little bit more speed, went 131 years later. It showed up to Job's trouble and the drought of Ruth, picked up a little bit more speed, and then it, at 136 years, it ended up coming to time of David and King Saul's period, where there was a drought of seven years, and then it finally came to a full orbit of 358, and that brought it to King Hezekiah, where the calendar changed from 360 days to 365 days. So it really depends on what it's bumping into, and as it's going through its travel, if it doesn't hit anything, it has a fairly constant orbit, but you also have the gravity of the other planets that can influence it. So we have normally if an object is off the planetary plane coming at an angle, there's not enough where there isn't any objects except some random pieces that may interfere with an object's orbit. Therefore, it can be timed just like a Swiss watch for it to come back on its normal trip, but not this item because it's on a planetary plane of Earth, and that's where most of the objects are.
That's right. I'm actually working on some information about that. I may have it up this afternoon, maybe tomorrow, about actually where, Gil, they have three of our major infrared telescopes pointing right now. And it's very interesting, the area, and they're picking up a lot of information from that one spot. But I have the models, and it would take too long to go into it now, except they are looking. Now, it's slightly above the ecliptic and the slightly north. If you're from in the northern hemisphere, you would be almost northwest in the sky. But again, I'll have to show the models because a picture's worth a thousand words on that deal. But they definitely have both the Hubble, the IRAS, the Spitzer, and one of the other new satellites aimed at one specific point. And that's very interesting. And they're analyzing the data. They get so much in that it takes them actually months to go through this infrared information. And they will compare plates from 1 month to the next as far as background stars to determine the movement. But that will be up, and they definitely have all the money looking in one location right now.
Well, keep in mind, Jesse, we have 3 6-points, okay? If it fulfills the biblical narrative, as well as what the Chinese, Japanese, and the Korean astronomers saw, this object crosses Earth's path twice, with roughly 150 to 152 days apart. Modern time, it's 152 days. If it had been with a calendar year of 360 days, it'd be 150 days apart. But because we have a 365 and a quarter day, it's actually 152 days. So the other 6-point is the center of the sun, where all objects are kind of like hinged to or pivot from. So we have 3 6-points. That means for the debris field, if this object is 7 times the object, size of Earth, for the debris field to miss Earth, it can't be more than 0.2 of a degree off the ecliptic. Otherwise, we have nothing to worry about. The debris
right.
field would miss it. So that's why when people point to things that are off the ecliptic, and out of the Sagittarius and group there, I just say, well, that's not our object. It might be an object that's too far away to run into problems for us in the present. There's multiple qualifiers, but one of them for right now, it needs to be on the ecliptic coming out of Sagittarius or to the left of Sagittarius. And
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Gil.
Yeah, for it to follow the present data we have, most people don't have data. It's random. They're trying, but we have data using the Chinese records. And I believe the only reason why we have those records is because it was mislabeled as a supernova. And
right.
And we have white paper reports proving it's not a supernova because it moved through multiple constellations. Supernovas are stationary. They will not have different constellations that they're seen in.
Exactly right. And I can't ever remember in history one being visible, especially in the daytime, for that long amount of period of time, Gil. Another thing I noticed was that you were talking about in, I think, March 26th of next year, 2016, and you put that we were talking about it in your video, that this thing would probably be visible coming in by watching Virgo with Leo just above it on that date. And we looked at it on Stellarium. And what's interesting is Mr. Harrington, who was one of the people that was looking for the Planet X, and they actually had data on that, and he ended up mysteriously dying. But he said that he thought it would be coming up in Gemini to the right of your location. Now, the other scientists he was working with said he thought that we should be looking at Scorpio. And if you look at, and I drew a line, I pulled them both up on Stellarium on March 26, 2016. Your location was dead in the middle of both of their estimates, and it would be on the ecliptic. In other words, when those three events, right before Gemini goes down, and as Gemini's going down, Scorpio's rising to the left, your point with the Virgo with their foot over the moon is dead in the center on the ecliptic coming in at that point. It's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to, that amazed me, just that fact. And what got my attention about your videos is that chart where you showed that instead of a supernova would be in one location at all times as the Earth turned, it would still be being reported at the same place. But there were people coming in from Baghdad, from Japan, China, Korea, I think it was, showing that they had seen it from their location, and you used that information to actually chart the incoming and outgoing orbit, and which, by the way, would give you that it passing the Earth twice because of the incoming and outgoing orbit. We've seen it on big comets and things like that. But it was extremely accurate, Gil, for you to be dead in the middle of Mr. Harrington and the other scientists on their prediction.
And then again, there's 88 constellations. What are the odds of us reversing the model from the date given on March 26th on the Revelation, and we reverse the model? And it actually threads the needle, places you in between the Voyager and Pioneer probes. Out of 88 constellations, it just doesn't hit the same constellation. It threads the needle between the two, exact angle, exact, and this exact distance being on the ecliptic. You see? And this is the only way that we can have a double eclipse on a double meteor shower as reference to Revelation 6 and 7, which it says 5 months apart. 5 months is 150 or 152 days apart. The math doesn't allow it to be off the ecliptic. And for it to have a rendezvous on Passover, remember, Elijah shows up on the Feast of Passover. And the date given on this is 3.5 days after that. Well, Elijah announces, remember how they're dead for 3.5 days? And then they're prophesied for 1,260 days? Well, the word prophesied means to speak. They can't speak if they're dead. How many days are there on earth? 3.5 days longer than the bride that goes into hiding. That's exactly the period of time from the Feast of Passover on a full moon to the date given in Revelation 12:1. That was given to us 2,000 years ago, and I can tell you with a fact, if no man living can give us that date, even if they had software 2,000 years ago, because they would have to compensate for a 12-hour delay in Earth's rotation from a viewpoint from Jerusalem at midnight and know something that we don't even know today. What was the date of the orbit of this planet coming in? See, that's an unknown item.
Yeah, and that coincides
every other,
with the 100.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Gil, go ahead.
No, you can
we
go
may
ahead.
Have a slight delay here. I was just going to say that coincides with the 150 days of Noah's, in Noah's time. And it could have been from the, you talked about that. There's 150 days or 5 months mentioned there. There's 5 months of the locust army in Revelation. Two times those dates are mentioned.
Remember he said in the end times would be like the time of Noah. We didn't know to what extent. That he meant that, and now we know it's the mirroring of the entry and exit. There's outside text that says, remember in our Bible it says the floodgates of heaven, and the floodgates is plural. There's outside text that says seven floodgates were opened. I think seven meteors punctured the canopy of water that was above the earth. and that and took 40 days for it to empty out, and that flooded the earth. 150 days later, a large meteor the size of a mountain, like in Revelation. Remember, it says a fiery mountain hit the earth 5 months apart. The Noah's flood, there was a large meteor that hit earth. That formed the Gulf of Mexico. The opposite side of earth, 71% of its crush was ejected off of it. Then the water could recede into that area, which is our oceans today. And that debris ended up forming the moon. The volume of our moon is the exact volume of our ocean. If you put the moon back where our ocean is, you basically have a flooded earth except for the Himalayas. But the Himalayas were made in fractions of seconds during this event. And so what's interesting is the moon has no magnetic field. But yet, material tested it shows that it's slightly magnetic. Okay, so how does it get a magnetic field, to the objects, the material on it, but yet there's no magnetic field because there's no core? Secondly, they found iron ore that's rusty. It has rust on it from samples from the moon. Well, you can't have rust without an atmosphere and water. So how did that happen, since the moon has never had an atmosphere of water? And there's water, erosion. If you added all together, the moon definitely came from the earth, but it was during the state that when it had water and when we had a magnetic field, that meant the fully formed earth. It was, so we have a logical model that proves this out now.
Well, even the ancients in the Sumerian texts talk about an event like that called Tiamat, where a collision caused the formation of the moon also, Gil. So that's not far-fetched at all, because it's ancient, some of the oldest writings known to man, but they mentioned that very event at that point.
I can't make much comment on those ancient writings because I don't have a model for it or to prove it out, or there's any other writings to back it up. So I'll just leave it as it is.
I understand. Well, we were talking about what feast dates are you looking at in this coming spring? You're looking at Passover for 2016?
Like I said, I don't have a crystal ball. I cannot predict the future. All I'm saying is when you read Revelation 12:1, a little bit of astronomy. It's shocking it matches the past models of entry and exit.
Right.
It matches the exit part of the model, which is in March. And it also matches the customs of the Hebrews that Elijah will show up on the Feast of Passover. 3.5 days later, mid of night, the Messiah returns, but this is not called a rapture. It is called a taking away, but it's not the taking away to heaven. There's two taking aways in the Bible. People try to put them together, but there's one. There's two. One at the beginning of the 3.5 and one at the end. The one at the beginning is the remnant is taken to the wilderness for a time, 3.5 years. Okay, that's the one we're talking about, where the groom comes pick up his bride. It follows the Hebrew wedding, where she's brought to her chamber prior to the wedding and the feast. Okay, so then 3.5 years later, you can be anywhere on the earth, and you're raptured, you're taken away to heaven, the dead are first, and then the living. The terms quoted with each taking away are totally different, and we shouldn't change them. They're exactly correct. But it's where you position them. Remnant is never meant the entire unit of measure. Remnant means a part of. And wilderness never meant heaven. It meant a section. It just, if we leave it the way it states, it falls in place with the Hebrew wedding. That reference. And so.
Yep.
Put it this way, that date greatly concerns me. We won't have a verification until we see it. And it'll look like a comet. It will not look like a planet, per se. It'll look more like a comet because it's crossing the solar winds with a magnetic field, and that will cause a tail. And so be aware of a comet coming out of Sagittarius, and that it's on the ecliptic. If it meets those two qualifiers, that's our object.
Gotcha.
And so that's what we're waiting for. I think we have some interference at the present because there is no sighting at the moment, none that is valid, at least not in the public realm. And until we have verification of two, three amateur astronomers or professional, then we can qualify the date and the time. But right now, we may have. I've asked some high level people within agencies. I won't name the agent. I don't want to get the people in trouble. Have called me and they said when they looked at my information that this connected data, this the dots connected to forum on projects that they worked on. Whenever they saw this, the data that I was put up, that the dots connected. And so while I had these high-level officials here, I asked them, I said, is there a way for the government to block our view, whether it's hologram, plasma, or whatever means of it? And they gave a short answer, yes. They would not qualify how or what they're using, but they gave a short answer of yes. So if we have interference, we have to wait for it to come closer, where it forms the tail, the plasma tail. After that, they can't block it. And that's where I'm expecting, you'll see a Middle East war crank off to get people's attention away from the skies. And about a month after that war starts looking up, you know.
Well, it doesn't look like we're very far from that war. If you ask the people of Syria, there, it's pretty well going on, and we see the tensions rising. We see ISIS surrounding Israel.
War is CO4, but CO3 has to happen before 4. CO3 is economic collapse, and I would personally recommend, and that's my own choice. I can't biblically, you know, there is a few things that says the Middle East will rise and the economic and high power, but I would recommend maybe a couple $100 for people to buy some of the Iraqi dinar. If it goes up like we think it's going to go up, the dollar's going to be going down and the euro's going to be down. I think there's a very high chance of a good potential gain. Just recently, it's been noted in the data that they published that they just tested what's that banking? I can't remember the term. It starts with an S. There's a code between banks for transferring money, and they just got issued their code to be able to transfer money, and they pinged it, making sure all of the channels are open and ready. And they're also having meetings with the international banking system. So I think it's fairly close that they may be re-evaluating because they did a lot of changes and headway this year towards that. So. We'll have to see.
That, one of the things that you had mentioned was about some of the Middle East prophecies in Islam, and that there, what they some call the Mahdi, would be in power 7 years up until this point. And we know who's been in power here for 7 years. Something else about that, after you told me that, on the phone the other day. I started looking into it, and it also fits another piece of criteria that's in our Bible about the 3.5 years, about the Antichrist will make a covenant for 7 years, but will break it in the middle of the week at 3.5 years. And I trace that back, and our current president was put in January 22nd, 2009. On July the 12th, 2012, exactly 3.5 years later, the headlines in the New York Times was, for the first time in history, the United States has turned its back on Israel. And kind of sold them out over the Iranian deal even back then. And I remember it making headlines, but it immediately made me think about what you were talking about. There's too many signs pointing to 2016 as a major year.
Yeah, if you see, Seal 5 is pertaining to the peace agreement. Remember how the souls are complaining to God, why haven't you, if you revenged us yet? Where is our pound of flesh, basically? And he says, go back to sleep. It's not your time, because they're witnessing a peace agreement being signed. If this March 26th is the date, and I qualified, if it is the date, we can use Daniel's numbers and find out where the peace agreement, and it puts us around January 11th of a signing of a peace agreement. It puts the 40-day warning of Jonah around in February. And then, and that means before January, you have to have Seal 3 and 4, which is, Seal 3 is economic collapse, and Seal 4 is war and pandemic disease. A quarter of the world population would die of these diseases, and that's going to cause a great falling away. Remember, Yeshua said, before I return, there'll be a great falling away. Because they were told of a rapture that's not going to happen yet, you know, they put it in the wrong place. Many people are going to die because they're not prepared for this. You need 1 year of food. This is what's called a Sabbath year. The people who own the land place away 1 year of food, which is on the sixth year. We're in the seventh year, where the poor are able to gather into the fields and get their supplies. Okay, the last 6 months of that Sabbath year is where it's going to get rough. Start around September, around September, and the end somewhere around there is where that last 6 months starts. And you need to have at least 6 months of food supplies, because we're going to have a cyber attack. We're going to have our utilities are going to go off and on, just like a hurricane, that you can't rely on it. It's similar to that. You have to have similar supplies. And therefore, that's what's going to cause a great falling away. When FEMA comes up and starts forming food lines, and you have to stand in line, and some people in the line are sick, spreading the diseases mentioned in the Bible, and they see their loved ones dying and their life savings vaporized because the economy's falling. And there's a great falling away from, they think, you know, because they think, you know, God doesn't exist. No, it's your interpretation that's wrong. Not that God doesn't exist, you see, because they were told something without all of the information being present. We're just now getting this information. You better lay this out correctly. You see?
Well, Christ told us three times in the New Testament, in Mark 24, Luke 21, and Mark 13, that in those days after the tribulation, Gil, just like you're saying, after the tribulation they shall see the Son of Man coming. And the confusion is the difference in the tribulation Christ is talking about and then the latter wrath of God. And they have been confused. But it's not anyone's fault but each individual, because the Bible in Timothy tells us to study to show yourself approved. And just like you said and others have said, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. So when you listen to a preacher and you don't open the book and double check him out, then you're only putting yourself at jeopardy. Always study and look at it. But again, and the letters in red are the most important in the New Testament. And if Christ says three times for emphasis, after the tribulation you'll see me, that should be enough to override what any man tells you.
That's a good point. Let me bring a little bit more to light. Remember where it says nation against nation?
Right.
The nation he's talking about is Jacob and Esau. That's in Matthew, 24:7, where he talks about that. Okay, that's basically Islam against Jews and Christians. That's what it adds up, basically, talking about, okay? And and that started in year 2001. Deal one was a leader is chosen to make war. Chosen, okay? Bin Laden was chosen by the mullahs to make a jihad against the other nations, the Jacob nation, basically. All right? Seal two is the attack, September 11th. Peace is taken from the earth in 1 hour. Now, that was a Smita, a Sabbath year. All contracts end at the end of that Smita. So we start the next seven after that. Now, if you want to know Jacob's trouble is, remember, the war is declared on Jacob. Jacob's trouble, you want to find a time frame, you go to marriage. You go look at what Jacob went through to get his wife. And we're opposite, okay? We're the bride, and we're talking about the groom. Remember how he worked 7 years before, and he was tricked and didn't know the identity, and it was a false bride. Well, if you reverse it, it's a false groom. And 208, we got tricked. Didn't know anything about somebody. They called in the Messiah, some people. Now we have to wait another 7 years, okay? And then after this 7 years, it is a jubilee. At the beginning of that jubilee is the marriage. Beginning of the marriage. That's why Elijah comes back and sits at the table of the feast and says the groom is coming. So Jacob's trouble has already started. The word tribulation means trouble. We're in trouble, but it's going to escalate even higher now. We're going to go, call it the smaller trouble. Now we're going to go to the mid area of trouble. 3, 4. Then there's a peace agreement. That's still 5. Then we're going to go into the great tribulation. That great tribulation that the earth has never seen before. This is the type of trouble that is the greatest in all of earth's history, it says. We're fixing to live through the most significant point in all of biblical history. And that's the great tribulation. And he will come and you take a remnant to the wilderness, and whether or not you'll decide to follow his timing pattern. But the bride and the bridemaid has to be at her home for the bride, for the groom to pick her up. Her home is the old Jerusalem. Her new home is the new Jerusalem. In between that, she has to go to her chamber prior to the marriage. The chamber is the wilderness. It follows a Hebrew wedding, not a Western wedding. And when you read it in that perspective with the Hebrew and with the overlay of the stars and what happened in Noah and all of these data points that are in the Bible, all of these stories are data points. You see that these stories are not random. It's filling the missing gaps we missed.
I understand. You know, you look at the prophecy, and then if you look around the world at what the other religions are looking at as far as prophecy, it's amazing how close that, especially the two religions we're talking about right now, between you're talking about Ishmael and Isaac, basically, is that right now, You see the rise of ISIS. You see it surrounding Israel. It's going through Iraq, going through Syria, giving people trouble all the way around Israel as they are approaching. Yesterday, I think it was, they blew up an Israeli ship with a rocket. Well, if you look at their predictions, which is ancient also, they were there at this time, of what the end times are going to be like, they're talking about the same time that you're talking about, what we've been looking at. But they believe what they call the Mahdi, again, is they're the guided one. I think that's what that means. But it says that what they're looking for is the vast majority of people, this will be the events, who profess to be Muslim will be so only in name, despite their practice of Islamic rites, and it will be they who will make war with the Mahdi, which will be the return of the Islamic savior in a way. Now, if you think about that, they are fighting, the Islamic people are fighting. You've got Saudi Arabia bombing tribes in Yemen that are coming out of Iran. And it says also, before his coming, it will come, we will see the Red Death and the White Death. Again, this is Islamic tradition, killing two-thirds of the world's population. The Red Death signifies violence, and the White Death is a plague. One-third of the world's population will die from the death of Red Death, the other third from the White Death. Then certain figures will appear. One of them is who they call Isa, I-S-A, Christ, our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. They think that the Mahdi will come before Christ, which could be very correct. They think that he will set up a new one-world religion. Now, that fits into our timing, but it, yeah. What it's doing is identifying the Antichrist. The other thing is this. This is old writing. There will be a great conflict in the land of Syria until it's destroyed. You almost see that. Death and fear will affect the people of Baghdad and Iraq. Listen to this. A fire will appear in the sky, and redness will cover them. That's what they're looking for right before the return. And like you said, they said this leader would have to be in power for 7 years.
Let me give you a little qualifier based on that.
Okay.
Okay. He can't have the title of Mahdi. He has to perform his miracle, which our Bible says is a false miracle, because we already know what the miracle is going to be now. Okay. So before he creates his miracle, before he gains his title as Mahdi, he's a regular man in the political arena, and he's a world leader for 7 years, and that he will bring in a peace agreement, forced, you know, to the Middle East, and that there'll be a sign in the heavens proclaiming that's our planet. Okay, when he forms this miracle, which is the world governments will use the astronomy model and predict the Middle East, Europe, China, that side of the earth being hit by a meteor shower. Muslims will try to get a visa to travel out of the danger zone into other countries. They will be refusing them travel or not granting them a visa because of the terrorist activities that take place in Seal 4. And we're talking about Seal 6 right now. So the terrorist activity that took place in Seal 4 is the reason why they're not able to travel out of the country on Seal 6. The Mahdi goes there and changes times and laws. The time he's going to change, he says, I'm going to change the time zone by 12 hours and the law of that the Earth can stop on its axis. He's going to slow down the rotation of the Earth by 12 hours like it happened in Joshua's long day. Like I'm saying, it's going to happen on this one. When Earth goes through the tail of this comet, we will lose our rotational speed of 4.5% to 5.5% compounded hourly for the next 24 hours, where Earth will come to a complete stop. Then you're off by 12 hours. That means the target zone is exactly the opposite side of the Earth. In Islam, it says he causes fire to rain on their enemies. That is, and the Bible tells us on our side, it says one-third of the grass, one-third of the trees, and later it says one-third of the rivers They're describing continental crust. They didn't have a word for it, but that's what they're describing. When you look at a globe, what half of the globe is one-third of the continental crust? That's North and South America. The Bible is already telling us what the false miracle is going to be and what side of the earth is going to be. And he's already giving you a command, show up in Jerusalem, because you're fulfilling his rehearsal pattern. Show up in Jerusalem on Mount Zion on appointed time and date, which is we're supposed to be there for Passover. And Elijah will be there on the feast of Passover, and he will tell us the groom is coming. Then we know when he's coming. We'll fast after the feast for 3.5 days, and he will come on the day of the meteor shower. The opposite side of earth is being hit. Everybody is on the ground except for his people who are waiting for him. And we see him come out of heaven to bring us to the place of safety. It's so well timed out. It's beyond man to be able to write a story like this. It's just incredible. And because the physics have to match the story, and they didn't have the physics, we have it today. Okay? They didn't have the Kepler's laws of planetary. They didn't have any of this that we could calculate this. And it's right on. It's impossible for them to come up with, even to make up a story that follows the parameters given to us in science today. You see?
Yep. You know, something about that, if you think about it, we've all said that we're not getting all the information from our space telescopes. We have two that we've watched for years, stereo A and B, that are on the backside, and they're saying they're not transmitting. That would give us a heads up visually, but those satellites have conveniently went down at that point. My point being is, Gil, if they knew about this, and this was in the grand scheme of things, and they were going to promote their leader, in other words, we're saying that, like you said, that he will be able to perform miracles before men, cause and bring fire down from heaven. And if they hid the event and then let him predict it, whoever this leader turns out to be, let him, the Antichrist, let him predict it and say, I can bring fire down from heaven on the enemy, knowing that it was coming the whole time, it would fit into the scheme of things perfectly, both the hiding of the knowledge and the false miracles.
And it matches the model of the physics on what we know now of space. On the electric universe, the tail of a comet is not ice particles, it's plasma. And it will interfere with the energy going into our north and south pole and cause us to slow down on our rotational spin. And the model works out. They could not have guessed this. They couldn't.
Well, When they talk about when Christ sets his foot down on that day and we have the greatest earthquake we've ever seen, all the great earthquakes in the history of the planet have been because of close approaches of objects to our planet every time. And one of the things that you and I talked about on the phone was that I'm doing a video that's not up yet called The Comet of Destruction, and I actually trace Comet Halley back to 1510, and it's close approaches every 75 years or so to our planet, and the great earthquakes. And the thing about it, the closest that it was in all that time was 0.2 AU. You're talking about 20 million miles. 1 AU is not quite 100 million miles. 20 million miles from this planet with an object just that size is all it took to create magnetic interference, or what I call a magnetic slip between the Earth and the Sun. And because we're an electrical universe, what we did not have recorded at that time was what the Sun was doing at these close approaches, because we saw it with the last two big comets, tremendous X flares, as you have a negative charged object coming into the solar system with a positive charged Sun. Those reactions in themselves, but even at 20 million miles, Halley has brought tremendous earthquakes, leveled cities, brought firestorms down, and that had to be as we were going through the debris trail. Or even
the only, the, Now, the only thing I need to mention is that this object has been mislabeled as a comet in the past, and people assumed that it was Halley's. On certain years, Halley's has passed at the same time of year, maybe not in the same
right.
month, but in the same year, and it's been mistaken. That's why this is this, the data that we got to look for is something that looks like a very large comet. It does not.
That's
it's
true.
Not. It doesn't look like a planet, but it is a planet, but it has a comet-like tail in orbit. And so
right.
this has to be either redefined as maybe a different category. Like a, right now, I call it a planet slash comet because there's nothing recorded this large as a comet before, and it's not going to be loosely compacted material like a comet is. This is a solid body because it destroyed the planet Ceres. You know,
right.
So and it moved Mars and it's slightly higher. It moved Pluto. Remember what you said earlier about Tiamat.
Right.
I was thinking about it while we were talking throughout. I think I might be able to have a logical explanation, but the people who interpret this thought it was the moon. That was. There's no record of Venus prior to the Exodus documented in any drawings or papers. If Tiamat, if the new, instead of it being the moon, if it was Venus that was created, the brightest star.
Right.
Because when Ceres collided into, when Planet X collided into Ceres and dropped its speed to 1/20th, if it had a moon orbiting around Planet X, it would have broke away. Because of the sudden stop of the main planet, it would have given it enough speed for it to continue on. And it relocated itself as Venus today. You see? That
well,
might
that's
explain
close
that
enough to our planet. It's close enough to our planet to make sense. It's not in the outer
right.
solar system, it's here. And everything's gonna balance out between the gravity of the sun and the pull of the external planets. It will be that
right.
L1 for planets, or that zone to where they're matching in that magnetic pull from both ways. And you know
what?
They've talked about this object many times, and some say it may be a large object with its own debris field or smaller planets like Ceres or something like that. What do you think about that, Gil? Because one reason I'm asking is, for instance, going back to Halley's Comet for a moment, even though it comes into our inner solar system every 75 years or so, and it will return in the year 2061, I think, it comes in at a different point as far as where Earth is at that point. And so even if an object coming in at around 390 years or so, the Earth will be in a different position and have different effects. I mean, it will have different effects because of its location. In other words, as these comets come around, sometimes they will be close to Earth. You'll have more devastating effects. Sometimes the Earth will be on the other side of the sun during the close approach. So that's just the reason I said that it's a formula you have to put in when you're trying to determine these times when it came in, how the Earth was affected depending on where it was in the inner solar system.
Yes, because it's relative to the position of Earth when it was passing through. It could be far away, it could be close. A few times it has been close. Like for Hezekiah, when it changed our year for 3 years, it drove Earth slightly outward, less than 0.5%. That changed our yearly calendar for 360 to 365 and a quarter. And I can prove that Earth tilted at 2 to 3 times in its path. One was during Joshua's long day. We have the sky disk of Nebra that proves out that Earth tilted 26 to 28 degrees, and that it was a very unusual eclipse that took place that was not involving the moon. And And then there was another one. Let's see, when was the other one? Oh, for Hezekiah. The English version has a slight error in it where it says it was 10 degrees on a sundial. In the Hebrew, it doesn't say sundial. It says steps. And if we use steps and we build a model of that, we can prove out a 26 to 28 degree tilt again. And so, which proves out it had to pass close enough to drag us outward slightly to give us a misextended year. And I have to argue this point coming up here in the near future with some high level scientists in a room.
Right.
We definitely having effects. Remember, if you use an analogy, let's say you're going to squeeze a trigger on a gun to fire it, and you're going to put 8 pounds of pressure on it. But the trigger has a set pressure of only 4 pounds. So if you don't allow for release, even though you're putting eight, it goes off at four. So will we have effects when this thing on? Yeah, it's possible. You know, maybe before it, but before it lines up, it's not necessarily critical that it's on that day, because there's a trip point on stresses, and everything has a trip point. It doesn't wait until I line up before it trips. No, that's not the way things work. So it doesn't have effect. It's kind of hard to tell, you know,
right?
Because of these trip points, and you know.
Well, you know, the one thing I will say about it is that one thing that we may notice is a definite uptick in earthquake activity, as even before we see this object. The reason I say that, at one point, I think it was in, maybe wrong on the year, it's in the video, could have been 85. In the month of September, when Haley approached, again, 20 million miles, we had 5 7.0s leading up to that day. And as it left, we had continued strong quakes, even though it wasn't, you know, physically that close. But you may start seeing an uptick at that point.
Earthquakes right now, we have over 800% rise over this last century. That's a definitely changed. Even our magnetic north is moving 12 times from the last reported results. It may be going faster now, but it was moving 12 times its normal speed. And then you throw into those factors that we had on one particular week or something like that, we had thousands of tornadoes that popped out. I think in one major storm, we have major floods. We have 300 and 400 year breakers of storms and major catastrophes. Happened to be around the last time it passed. So there's too many coincidences if you believe in that.
Well, like you mentioned, the Mayan civilization went into that drought period, and it was completely gone by, what was it, the year 708? I think it was. They had completely had to abandon the area they were in because of overpopulation and drought. And that we see extreme weather now, drought in California, floods in Texas, a record snow last year in Boston, 108 inches.
Yeah, well, many of them died.
Yeah.
Many of them actually died because there was nowhere to go. You didn't have a bus or a train to take.
Yeah, I think, you know, there were around 20-something million people in that one area. But it was a double whammy. They had, were having a drought. They clear-cut all their timber, so it just made it even worse. But I saw in your chart where you're associating the orbits with these events, and it, to me, that's the only data that we have is to try to, and that's why I'm looking back through all the comet data, and so we can separate when the comets came through and the other catastrophes when there was not supposed to be one there. One very interesting was not on your chart, and I think we may have mentioned it. I think it was in the year 1430 when the Chinese astronomers and Korean astronomers noticed for over a month a bright blue object approaching our planet. At that point, their navy was the largest in the world. It was about to take over the southern hemisphere. Well, they were south of New Zealand. They had split the fleet into two different sections when this comet came through and struck the ocean 60 miles south of their location.
Yep.
700-foot tidal waves washed those ships, and those ships were huge. They were not like, they were wooden sailing vessels, but they were not like the ones in Europe. These were 300- and 400-footers, huge. They were on fire before they hit land, and they found them crushed into caves 700 feet up the mountains over Australia, New Zealand, and the Easter Islands. And that, to me, could be a traveling companion that had a lesser magnetic field that could be brought in by just a close approach. Like we said, sometimes the Earth may be completely on the other side of the sun. But these events have been recorded, and that is the most accurate data in astronomy, in the ancient times, is the Asian records.
Yes, and keep in mind, they think it's a comet. You know, it may have been just a large meteor. But I don't think there was any eyewitnesses that may have lived to be able to tell about it, possibly.
Right.
I'm not sure.
Well, they think it was more than one object because it actually burned most of the trees in New Zealand. A lot of people got burnt. Several villages were wiped out and things like that. But they did observe this object coming in. It's in their records for a long period of time before it struck. They made note of it. But that was 1430. That's when they think that the writing was. But, there was extremely high winds during that period of time when it hit, and that would have been possibly from the shock wave.
Yep. Dr. Manuel Vilikovsky, he logs quite a bit of data. He didn't know about this planet. You know, it may have, sometimes he mentioned it might have been a Mars, a few other theories, but it's actually this rogue planet, if you want to call it that. And if it wouldn't be for the Chinese data, the Chinese, Korean, and Japanese data, I would still be a skeptic today if this thing actually existed, but not anymore. The way it mirrors the eyewitness accounts of ancient times, and they had no prior knowledge of the way the planets moved, Kepler's laws of planetary motion, or what exactly is a meteor and comets and everything. And they're giving it in the right sequence of order and timing. What is science? If you define science as when you take observed phenomena, bring it into the laboratory and show it's repeatable, then it doesn't matter where the data comes from. Clay tablets, papyrus, Bible. You can't fake Kepler's laws of planetary motion and what's out there from what we know right now. You either saw it and it matches the data or it don't, you know. And I can tell you right now, I haven't found an error on what they're claiming. Everything's matching a model. The same model as the Chinese. We have the same overlay that's producing all of these particular fire hail incidents and the qualifiers that go along with these stories. Is the same overlay, and it's matching the laws. Matter of fact, the new laws, because we tried to do this 15 years ago, we would have failed. Because we were stuck on just an astronomy model of gravity. But with the new model of electric universe and what the physicists have said about the tail of a comet being plasma, when we put those two main items into the model, we got something that really works here. And we just found out about it recently, as far as this new physics and the new universe model. They couldn't have guessed it 2,000 years or many millennium ago. They couldn't have mirrored that if we're just now getting it right in the last 15 to 20 years. So
right.
That's why our models would have failed earlier. We were wrong as astronomers and a scientist. It wasn't the Bible that was wrong. It was our knowledge of the circumstances were wrong. Right now we're proving it
out. That's right. You know, in our modern history, in the last 100 years or so, we have not had a hailstorm like that. People don't realize that all the times, and even like in your video, where you're showing the tapestry, I think from Germany in the 1400s, 1459 or something, 1451, where these things were, people were dying, trees were breaking off, earthquakes were striking, and fireballs were coming out of the sky in repeated pictures and tapestry. We have just not experienced it except for a couple fireballs like the Cherblinks meteorite a couple years ago over Russia. But as far as a hailstorm like that, we don't understand what we're talking about. In the book of Job, God told him, you do not know what treasures I have in store as far as the hail for the final battle. He's talking about that very thing, but you know, a generation, a couple generations don't see something, it's hard to comprehend. But too much documented evidence of these events.
You know, what's interesting, the Bible tells us every wall on earth is cracked from one of these events, which I believe is the second event, not the first. Every wall on earth is cracked. Earth wobbles like a drunkard, like a hut in the wind.
Well, when you see that pole of good talk change, I believe.
You know, tell me what type of viewpoint a man 2,000 years ago could have made, because he didn't have satellite pictures. He didn't know the earth could be like a ball wobbling in the wind beyond their imagination or knowledge to be able to say things like that. This is, and it matches a model. You can build a model that that could very well happen. And
that's right.
And I'll say it will happen. You know? So we need to pay close attention to the data.
Well, the earth wobbled during the Fukushima earthquake. They had to repaint stripes on some of the Miami airports down there so the pilots could match them with their compasses. So we know it can wobble and it can change the entire planet.
Yep.
But again, they're talking about Christ said a quake like never before. That's talking very close approach to me, because it's those type of events, either it's solar explosions or these type close approaches, each time that I've seen these major quakes in history and in modern times.
Things are just showing off things are just off the chart. Things are there. It's like exponential growth we're looking at as far as earthquakes, volcanoes, weather patterns, seasonal changes, bird and fish kills, magnetic north moving. We even have other planets warming up. Like one of the moons, I forgot which planet it was, but one of the moons, a volcano erupted because the core was heating up too much, and it had to release pressure, and that's what happened, and that's why we have there's something causing all of this interference, and it's not just Earth. Just the other day, there was a university did a study. I don't have the complete study, but for the first time, the moon in its elliptical orbit around Earth went way beyond its norm. because the lasers that they can reflect off, that have a laser reflector, and you, and they can measure it within an inch or quarter of an inch, and it went way beyond what it ever did before.
Did they give
to
a?
Me, the only,
did they say how much? Which is the deviation?
No, not on that little news, the news flash, but probably have it in the study. You'd have to track it down, but there is a university that did that. And
that's amazing. That is amazing because two things that could be happening there. One is something interfering between the magnetic pole of our planet and the moon, or an external force outside of that orbit of our of us and the moon. You know, something that's just something to think about. It's a lot to think about, but that would more than likely, because we have not had anything come between us and the moon, point to an outside source.
Well, several years ago, the Japanese did a study. I have it, and they had noted that something was causing the wobble of the moon to be erratic. That it was shuddering. It was not following its normal pattern, because they follow the moon because the stresses of the water, the tidal, is more influencing for an earth, for like an earthquake or whatever. So they monitor all of that, and they found out and picked up on it that something is disturbing the moon, and that was several years ago. And now we have a study that it went further out than it normally that normally would. And
was there a date that you remember on the laser test that showed that?
No, I don't have it at hand. I'd have to find it. It's in my laptop here. I can find it. I can mail it to you, and that would give you the university and the studies to find.
Well, if you get time, maybe email it to us and we can talk about it on the next time we get to do this. The reason I say that, in 2012, an event happened that the magnetopause models reversed. In other words, they're normally showing the streaming, the solar stream coming across from the sun to the earth. Something happened in 2012. It reversed. I've got it recorded. It's in my files. At that time, there were two different models for the magnetosphere. One is still up. The other one was a Japanese model. That day, they took the Japanese model down and have not let it come back up since that point. But something had to, there had to be an outside influence that had a stronger plasma stream of protons and electrons than our sun, or either something had to block the flow from our sun. Something happened at that point, and I was wondering if that would cause the moon's orbit to change. If you had a solar stream interference, that is the main magnet in the whole inner solar system.
Yeah, keep in mind, magnetic fields affect plasma, and the vacuum of space is not a true vacuum. It's like a lake of plasma. So it's sending these interference waves outward as it's getting closer. And and plasma, it reacts to it. So we don't have a proper model yet, at least not publicly, for us to figure this out properly.
You're right about the plasma and the magnetism, because just last month they came out with a report in the model showing that the magnetic lines of force around our planet are surrounded by plasma tubes.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know that, but they finally figured that out through different satellite information. There's a tremendous amount of plasma being that's entering our Earth atmosphere via the magnetic lines. It's a highly charged universe.
That it is.
Well, Gil, we got about 5 minutes left showing on the air, on our stream left here. What would you, to end this, we talked about a lot of different things. What would you say to our guests? We've got a lot of people listening, just to kind of wrap this thing up. what they should be looking for, preparing for?
I would prepare food, water, and whatever supplies you need for between a year to 6 months supply. And then wait for a sign in December. If you see a comet-like object coming out of Sagittarius on the ecliptic, then make your plans to head to Mr. Jerusalem sometime around February when they give you the 40-day warning to go opposite of what they said. It's not going to be, you're not going to experience a meteor shower in on that side of the globe where Jerusalem is. Remember how Yeshua comes mid of night? Well, the meteor shower in March is on the daytime side of Earth. So if he's coming mid of night, that means he's coming on the dark side. That's the opposite side where there's no meteor shower. So he's already telling you the position of Jerusalem is going to be opposite from that time frame of the meteor shower. Follow the instructions. It's right on the money that he gives us. And that's what I leave you people with. The Bible is factual, a lot more factual than what we give it credit for.
Well, Gil, that's very interesting. And maybe the next time we get together, we can talk about one other thing you mentioned, and that is, and I've been reading about it since you told me, and it's the Fort Antonio in Jerusalem and the history behind that. It's very interesting.
Sure.
Where the real temple, and that they're fighting over the wrong location this whole time. That's a pretty real interesting information, and I think it's going to tie in with these end time events. But
I believe so.
I saw your diagram. I saw the diagram that you sent me, and then I read the history of that. All of these things are pointing to something happening here very soon. Now that they're discovering some of the real locations. I think we're going to see a move in Jerusalem. That's going to be one of the signs that we're approaching this time. And one other thing that I want to say before we run out of time is we're talking about the coming of Christ at Passover. Gil, you remember what he did, one of the first things he did when he came into Jerusalem before the Passover, before? He overturned the tables of the money changers. And we see that the governments are in trouble now, so we may see a repeat of that. That story is there for a reason.
You know? Keep in mind, it's Elijah that comes on the feast of Passover, because the Passover is fulfilled. Feast of Passover, Elijah comes in, has not been fulfilled yet. Then the Messiah returns 3.5 days later, mid of night, you see.
That's right.
He has to announce
after the two witnesses.
Yeah.
That's right.
So,
well, Gil, I'm looking forward. It's going to be exciting times. The way it looks now, we're kind of seeing the Bible unfold in the daily headlines. You pay attention. But, guys, I'm going to give you a call and send any information you want to send me on the email. Do that, and I've got some on Dr. Harrington that I want to send to you about one of the first people that were searching for Planet X. And one of the things in that history of that, he wasn't 51 when they said he died of cancer, but he had just done an interview with Zachariah Sitchin, and then he ended up missing. He never got to really. But guys, thank you for coming to the show. These will be, if friends miss it, it will be in the archives. I'm sure Gil will put some of it up on his channel. We'll do the same on our YouTube channel also. But guys, it's a heads up. Be safe. We're going to see you this Monday at 1 p.m. Central Daylight Time. You guys don't miss it. Everyone, have
Thank
a great
you,
day. Heads up. You're welcome, Gil. Heads up, everyone, and be safe.